my understanding is they gave you a budget, I think of around $15,000, and they said, okay, go put this collection together. And I think a lot of it, if not most of it, comes from eBay, right?
Indeed. And at first, we didn't know if we should even come clean with that admission, but it became a better and better and more entertaining part of the story. At first, we met and just went over the basics of what the narrative of the show could be and what objects we would need to tell that story. And then I did some initial research about acquiring those objects. The museum was hesitant to work with collectors for a couple of reasons. The biggest one being registrars at museums have to log in and out every object that comes into the museum and do a condition report. And this show has over 1,000 objects in it. And that would have just crippled the entire staff there to borrow 1,000 objects for a summer show. So because they're relatively available still, we sort of considered our options for where we could get things. And it turned out that eBay, with enough time, was a really great way to collect the objects for this show. Only a tiny handful of things come from other sources. Almost everything came from eBay.
Did you ask the folks at eBay? Did you actually tell them what you were doing and what you were looking for?
I contacted them just to let them know, because I'm not certain that a museum has ever gone down this path before, and I thought they'd be interested to know that in addition to helping you clear out your attic or lighten your load by selling stuff on eBay, there are other layers of usefulness. The amount of information I learned from the eBay community, from the toy sellers on eBay, was astounding. I went into this assuming, as most sort of researchers do, that books would tell me the story, that articles would tell me the story, that I would use primary source investigation. And it turns out that the eBay community, just in describing the toys they were selling, taught me an awful lot about the problems the designers had in creating these toys, the longevity issues, the material problems, all sorts of information about how the toys were designed and what was considered and what worked and what didn't work came out of that eBay community.
So we consider this art. Does that mean the designers of these toys are artists?
Well, as a design teacher, I would have to say yes. But I think when you identify what matters in terms of art, there's interpreting the world and representing that in another unrelated material. There's craftsmanship. There's clarity of expression. If you look at a Barbie face, especially the older vintage ones, which were mainly painted by hand or using a primitive stenciling system, the ability to reduce all the information that would be in a person's face to just a couple of layers of quick spray paint is remarkable. And that is an artistic skill, the ability to reduce and refine using a limited palette of materials. So I would say definitely the designers were artists with another layer of engineering added to the requirement.
Is there any one item in this entire collection that you found most fascinating?
I went into this with no interest, really, in Barbie dolls or Matchbox cars. And the more I got to know them, the more I fell in love with them. And there are some remarkable, remarkable accomplishments represented in both lines. I would have to say the iconic Matchbox bus was an early entry and stayed in the line all the way through the end and became one of the most iconic produced models, and they made many, many versions of it. So for me, watching the evolution of that from a very simple two-part casting that just snaps together to a highly complicated multi-part casting with rivets and press assemblages, to see how crafty they were at representing an enormous complicated vehicle in miniature was very satisfying, and to see how that developed over time. And I would say on the Barbie front, I was most fascinated by the hairdos, because the original Barbie doll had hair in a ponytail, which it had to be because it was only attached around the perimeter of her hairline. So if you pull the hair back to the one point farthest away from all those hair rooting holes, you get a ponytail and only one thin layer of hair over her head. And it never occurred to Mattel that children would want to undo that ponytail. They just styled it and glued it in place. And so instantly, every child who undid the ponytail of a Barbie had this horrible situation with a completely bald doll with a little fringe of damaged hair. And they realized very, very quickly that they would have to innovate and come up with better ways to allow children to play with the hair. And that took them over 10 years to perfect. And so watching that struggle of you can't tame children. They'll always do the wrong thing with everything. And instead of being frustrated by that, to watch designers take that on as an inspiration and a challenge, for me, that's what I fell in love with, the evidence of innovation.